The views and opinions expressed on America's Workforce Union podcast and its digital media channels are solely those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent the views and opinions of the producers or sponsors.
Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
More on the historic union vote at Volkswagen in Tennessee. Getting ready for the Dirty Dozen on Workers' Memorial Week. And today on the show, the latest from the Alliance for American Manufacturing and our independent labor voice, Mr. Thomas Buffenbarger. Welcome to the Tuesday, April 23rd edition of America's Workforce, where we're available on at least five platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Pandora. We have two guests on the show today. We're going to start things off with Mr. Scott Paul, who serves as president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing, AmericanManufacturing.org. We're going to spend a lot of time today on China. Why? Well, last week on April 17th, the Biden administration rightly launched an investigation into China's unfair trade practices in the shipbuilding sector. Now, we talked about this with Scott in previous episodes of America's Workforce, and here's the deal. The United States Trade Representative, the USTR, proceeded last week with an initiation of an investigation into China's unfair trade practices aimed at dominating, and I mean dominating, the global shipbuilding sector. This is a quote from Scott. The Biden administration is right to move ahead with an investigation into China's predatory practices in its shipbuilding industry. I am also encouraged to hear that the president will call for tripling tariff rates on Chinese steel imports, because whether it is steel and aluminum or shipbuilding or any other industry, we know China's government will do whatever it takes to dominate. Now, the last time we had Scott on the air, he reported that China is currently the world's largest shipbuilder, dwarfing American shipbuilding capacity. Now, if you go back 2 years, in 2022, China built over 46% of the world's ships. South Korea, number two, just under 30%. Japan, third, 17.25%. You know where the U.S. is? 0.13%. 0.13%. Meanwhile, there's more. China's overcapacity threatens not only U.S. automakers, but a myriad of other critical U.S. industries, including solar. Now, earlier this month, the Treasury Secretary, Janet Yellen, proceeded her visit to China with a speech at a solar factory panel company in Norcross, Georgia. The company's name is Suniva. It's set to reopen after shutting down back in 2017. Why? Chinese solar dumping. Suniva was just one of many U.S. solar manufacturers that went out of business in the 2010s. And without proactive trade policy, you know what? We're going to see more of this. The big issue now, electric vehicles. Back in February, a Chinese automaker by the name of Build Your Dreams, BYD, they unveiled a new electric sport utility vehicle called the Wan Up. You know what the price is? $14,000. $14,000. Why? Because the Chinese government is subsidizing the company. They received $3.7 billion in direct subsidies from the Chinese government, according to a report from the Kiel Institute for the World Economy. BYD is not alone either. Overall, industrial subsidies in China are several times higher than those in the European Union or the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development countries like the United States. And Sherrod Brown, Senator Sherrod Brown, I tell you, he knows all about this. In fact, he recently released a statement saying that it would probably be a good idea that the United States not allow any of those vehicles on the U.S. market. Because you know what's going to happen. You know what's going to happen. So Scott Paul will be our first guest on the show. Then we go to Tom Buffenbarger. He, too, is going to talk about shipbuilding because the new general president of the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, a position that Tom held some years back, began his career as a shipbuilder at the Bath Iron Works at Local S6 for the Machinists Union. We're primarily going to talk about Boeing. This story just doesn't cease to stop. Recently, you might have caught some of this. A whistleblower warned Congress, this was last week, that the 787 Dreamliner, which is a pretty big plane, a really big plane, it could fall apart in midair unless safety issues are addressed. Now, we heard about the door blowing off on the Alaska Airlines jet. In the meantime, the management at Boeing is under fire. The CEO is leaving the company. And boy, is he getting paid well. Holy smoke. The 2023 pay package of David Calhoun rose about 45% to $33 million. Company's falling apart, but they're paying this guy millions of dollars. And he's not alone. So Tom is loaded with a lot of information. He'll be joining us later in the show here on America's Workforce. Now, a brief look into the world of labor. The segment brought to you by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, offering fixed income, real estate, and equity investment options to clients nationwide. $17 billion in assets. You can find more at BoydWatterson.com. Well, this week is Workers' Memorial Week, and Sunday is Workers' Memorial Day, and we commemorate that day. That was when OSHA was founded back in 1970, and it started in effect, I believe, a year later. And every year, labor does a lot of outreach to point out the fact that there's a lot of workers get up in the morning, they go to work, and they don't come home. For various reasons. If you're a police officer, maybe you died in the line of duty. If you're working in a coal mine, maybe you just didn't come out of that coal mine. I mean, there's a lot of things that happen on the job. And the National Council for Occupational Safety and Health will announce their Dirty Dozen Employers of 2024. This is going to be this Thursday at 2 p.m. Central Time. The Dirty Dozen are examples of employers that put workers and communities at risk due to unsafe practices, which lead to preventable illnesses, injuries, and fatalities. And several of the Dirty Dozen have also engaged in harassment and retaliation against those workers who are standing up and speaking out for safety on the job. Now, Jessica Martinez, who is the co-executive director of National COSH, will be part of this Zoom call, along with Shimon Sapphire Bernstein, an Uber Lyft driver and a member of the Chicago Gig Alliance. Also, Anna Mashia, former worker at Costa Farms in Florida, a member of We Count. A lot of injuries on farms, especially heat-related injuries. And Cindy Smith, a 29-year-old veteran at the Waffle House and a member of the Union of Southern Service Workers. They're affiliated with SEIU. Jessica's quoted as saying, "This is an exciting and challenging time for U.S. workers. It's exciting to see a renewed interest in joining unions, participating in worker centers, and connecting with advocacy campaigns. The challenge facing workers who are fighting for something better is that conditions in U.S. workplaces are actually getting worse. The latest data show an increase in workplace fatalities, injuries, and illnesses. And an increasing number of children are being assigned to dangerous jobs. And the reality of climate change is bringing the risk of extreme heat to both indoor and outdoor workplaces." Just to reflect on this for a minute, last year, I'm just going to run down some of the Dirty Dozen from 2023. Amazon was on that list because of multiple deaths at Amazon warehouses and citations at 7 locations for exposing workers to hazardous conditions. FedEx, 3 workers died at the shipping giant's Memphis hub. This was in 2022. 3 Latino construction workers died when scaffolding collapses on a project by the Hanover Company. This company was cited 9 times by OSHA, including 1 citation, now deleted for a scaffolding violation. So they try to cover it up. And there's also the train derailment disaster in East Palestine, Ohio, and they cited Norfolk Southern. And also a couple of other Class 1 freight railroads, BNSF, CSX, Kansas City Southern, Union Pacific, Canadian Pacific, and the Canadian National Railway. Why? Because rail workers warned of safety problems long before that accident happened in East Palestine, Ohio. So they lumped all of them together. There are more, too, but National Kosh will be coming out with this on Thursday, and we'll be talking a whole lot more about this here on America's Workforce. I want to talk more about that historic union election in Chattanooga, Tennessee, over the weekend, where the UAW won the election by a margin of 73%. Now, this marks the first unionized foreign-owned auto assembly plant and the first auto plant in the South to unionize through an election since the 1940s. Can you believe that? The victory comes after unionization elections failed narrowly at the plant in 2014 and then in 2019, and is a part of the UAW capitalizing on the momentum built by the landmark contracts it won at the Big Three last year. As Yolanda Peoples, a member of the organizing committee, explained, when they went on strike, we paid close attention just to see what happened. Once they won their contract, well, it changed a lot of people from anti-union to pro-union members. Another worker involved in the organizing, Angel Gomez, reported that political divisions were the primary hurdle for the organizing campaign. Apparently, there was an anti-union website set up prominently featuring a social media post by former President Donald Trump criticizing Sean Fain, the UAW president, and tying support for the union to support the Democratic Party. Well, you know, they pulled out all the stops on this one. Well, as we talked about this on the show several times, Republican lawmakers in the state campaigned strongly against the union, and the governors of 6 southern states put out a joint statement warning that joining the UAW would threaten jobs in the state. However, Gomez, speaking, said these tactics were not successful. People, for the most part, are smartening up, and they're not paying attention to the political crap. So hats off to the UAW on what they were able to accomplish in the state of Tennessee. And next up is the Mercedes plant in Alabama, and that election will be in the middle of May. All right, quick break. When we come back, Scott Paul on behalf of the Alliance for American Manufacturing.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The Iron Workers Great Lakes District Council, consisting of 8 iron worker local unions in West Virginia, Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Michigan. We build the skylines and bridges along the Great Lakes. With more work than ever before, the Great Lakes District Council is actively searching out the next great iron worker. Whether it's building the next Intel plant or constructing a bridge to safely connect our great cities along the lake. So join the Iron Workers Great Lakes District Council today. Find out how and learn more about the council by visiting iwdistrictcouncil.com. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America. You can find more at cwa-union.org.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, where you could find more at teamster.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy,
and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Auto Workers. Find more at uaw.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency. You can find more at ulagency.org. Let's go to line number one. Welcome one of our great sponsors. That would be the Alliance for American Manufacturing. AmericanManufacturing.org is their website. Do check out their homepage. A lot of good information on there, especially about the manufacturing of vinyl records. Yeah, vinyl has been coming back for the last couple of years. We'll touch on that a little bit later. But we have Scott Paul on the line right now, who's president of the Alliance. And I'll tell you, as you told me off the air here, Scott, it was an epic week here last week. I'm going to let you pick it up because, you know, sometimes everything seems to go your way and you got to savor that moment. And I know you and I were talking about the Chinese shipbuilding and how the United States is just a minor player in this. But last week, I think they tried to do a reset. So talk to me about what happened. It's all yours, Scott. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Flash. Thanks so much for having me on. I appreciate it. The Steelworkers Union represents workers in a lot of different industries in addition to steel, and they obviously they have some shipyards, and they also manufacture some of the materials that go into ships. And one of the ongoing concerns, and look, this affects all of us, I'm going to say, is that we're just getting outshipped. Okay, we barely make any ships in the United States. I mean, in a good year, we're churning out like 10, 15 ships or something like that. And China has 230 times the capacity to make ships than we do right now. They dominate the global shipping market. As things get a little more tense, probably not a good idea to have that. And there's a lot of crossover too. Those commercial shipyards also lean on the same supply chains as our defense industrial base and the manufacturers that are making aircraft carriers and submarines and what have you. And so when that ecosystem shrinks, it's bad news on the Navy side as well. And so there's a whole lot of concern about it. Steelworkers filed a trade case to say, hey, we do need a plan to restore shipbuilding capacity in the United States. And they point out that there are unfair trade practices happening in China that led to China's rise in all of this. And they asked the Biden administration to intervene. And the great news, as you alluded to, Flash, is that last week, the Biden administration said they were going to accept the case. They're going to start the investigation. It could result in a new shipbuilding program in the United States that would benefit a lot of communities, again, even if they don't have shipyards, just because of all the material that goes into shipbuilding. And you know, even more important than that, that's a step towards restoring some economic and national security that we had lost because of this gap. And the best thing, kind of the cherry on top, was that The president announced this when he was in Pittsburgh at the steelworkers headquarters with hundreds of steelworkers, and so it was a really, really big moment for the steelworkers.
Yeah, tripling the tariff rates on Chinese steel imports. This would be steel and aluminum. Now this, now we have tariffs now, and the previous administration put those tariffs in place. So whatever those were, they're going to be tripled. Then is that right?
Yeah, some of the this is where we get into trade jargon and acronyms. I apologize to your listeners in advance for all of this, but there are a couple of different mechanisms in our trade laws where we apply tariffs. And
okay,
the one that Biden was talking about is called Section 301. We actually have tariffs on a lot of different Chinese products coming in that range from 10 to 25%. And so this would, for those steel products that are covered, this would triple that level. And we currently do have some tariffs on Chinese steel that are 25%, and but this would bring them all up to a level that makes sure that they're not going to dump steel in the United States, because there's strong evidence that, you know, China's economy is weak, and the way that the government is trying to get their economy moving again is just to make stuff and ship it overseas instead of consuming it at home. And that creates problems all over the world, including in manufacturing communities in the United States, where, because it means that factories here are going to get shut down, basically.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. It appears that the White House is reading the room on this. And I saw in your release about the polling done, and this is off the charts, an overwhelming majority, 82%. That's over 4 out of 5 U.S. adults agree that China's dominance of the global shipbuilding industry is concerning. 32% say very concerning. A vast majority, 76% of adults, think that the use of Chinese-built dry docks to repair, maintain, and retrofit U.S. Navy vessels is a threat to U.S. national security. And by far and away, most respondents, 74%, support the U.S. government investing in the shipbuilding industry domestically. And right now, yeah, China's got over 46% of the world's ships. United States, 0.13%. This is ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, you think about it, and what built our nation up, and, you know, the arsenal of democracy that we had in World War II, and just our ability to outpace everybody else in terms of churning out ships that were both military and commercial. And, you know, beginning in the 70s, we saw a decline in that. And then Reagan completely shut down the shipbuilding program in the United States. And then that really devastated the shipyards. And, you know, some of those are on the Great Lakes, as well as being on the coasts. And it obviously had a financial impact on those communities. But again, just loss of capacity. And so, you know, most ships coming in to dock at U.S. ports right now were made in China. And here's the thing. It's gotten so bad, and we've lost so much of the capabilities, that even for some repairs like dry docks, our Navy has to use Chinese dry docks for repairs, because we really don't have the capacity to make those anymore. And it's just, you shake your head and you're like, that doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't. We gave this industry away. We really did. Meanwhile, there's more here. Talk to me about the Treasury Secretary, Janet Yellen. She went to a solar panel factory in Norcross, Georgia, Suniva. I remember this story too, because we're trying to do the right thing in here. You know, we're trying to get away from fossil fuels, go to solar and wind, and apparently here comes China dumping their products in here. And is this plant back in business? Maybe you can reference what's going on.
Yeah. So there was it's been a rough go for the solar industry in the United States, I will say. I mean, I know I was younger at the time, but I still remember when, you know, Reagan took the solar panels off that Jimmy Carter had installed at the White House.
I remember that.
And that's Yeah, and so that's kind of indicative of how our solar rise has been in the United States. It's been up and down and up and down and up and down, even though I would say we have a comparative advantage in sun. We have a lot of sun in many parts of our country. It would be like the perfect energy source. And the problem is that, you know, we didn't have the policies to incentivize it. In fact, the opposite. And so it was hard getting started. And the rest of the world said, hey, you know, we're gonna do this because they didn't have access to fossil fuels, or they were concerned about, you know, having more renewable energy. And China, of course, jump-started its industry, heavily subsidized it, came again to dominate the world's industry. They completely wiped out the German solar industry. And so in the U.S., every time we've tried to start it, we've had a wave of like dumped solar panels from China. And finally, we have the incentives back for both people to build factories in the United States to make solar equipment, and also to install it commercially, utility scale, residential. And now there's going to be some tariffs that are put back into place. And so, yes, this factory that had been start, stop down in Georgia is starting again, in part because of these incentives, but also in part because we're pushing back against the unfair trade from China on the solar imports. So again, we're giving an industry a chance in the United States. And look, even if you are, you know, you want a diversity of energy supply, whether it's from natural gas or nuclear or whatever, solar is definitely part of the answer. And so the idea that we'd be installing a bunch of Chinese solar panels in the United States, again, is annoying to me, because I'm like, we can make that stuff here. We invented the technology. We perfected it. We have the largest market in the world for it. So let's do it here.
All we're looking for is a level playing field. That's all we want. Scott Paul joining us on our live line today on behalf of the Alliance for American Manufacturing. He's president of the Alliance, and that website, which I encourage you to go to, is AmericanManufacturing.org. There's more to come on China. We're going to tell you about building your dreams. Build Your Dreams is a car company in China, which could be a nightmare for American automakers. We'll talk more about that. And later in the show, Tommy Buffenberger, our independent labor voice, will be joining us to talk about Boeing. Back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.
Are you an experienced mechanical insulator looking to take your career to the next level? Insulators Local 50 in Central Ohio has steady work for a number of years. Insulators Local 50 offers a total wage and benefits package that can't be beat. It's not just the competitive wages. Local 50 also provides medical, vision, and dental insurance with no paycheck deductions for you and your family. Don't miss out on the chance to secure your future. Join us at Insulators Local 50. Earn great pay and the best benefits. Visit insulators50.com/AWF50 to fill out the online form, and a Local 50 representative will call to begin the process. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Steelworkers. You can find more at usw.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at boydwatterson.com.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the International Federation of Professional and Technical Engineers. You can find more at ifpte.org.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
This segment of the show is brought to you by the Brotherhood of Maintenance of Way Employees Division of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. For more information, please visit bmwe.org. America's Workforce is presented by the Laborers International Union of North America. Feel the power right now at liuna.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on at least five platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Pandora. And when you get an opportunity, here's what you do. Just sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and give us a rating. We always appreciate those five-star ratings, so please keep them coming. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. You can find more at oh.aft.org. Let's go back to Washington and rejoin Scott Paul. Scott is president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing, AmericanManufacturing.org. That's what we're trying to do, get that manufacturing back from China. Because ever since we normalized relations with China back in 2001, we have seen an exodus of jobs, good manufacturing jobs, millions of manufacturing jobs. Now, some of them are coming back, but we got to stop the bleeding here. Scott, I was reading about China's electric vehicle market. And there's a company called Build Your Dreams, BYD, that unveiled a new electric sport utility vehicle called the One Up. Price is starting at $14,000. Now, we know how that's happening. They are basically, the government of China more or less is behind this whole vehicle here. And what do they want to do? Do they want to dump these on the United States? Is that their game plan here?
Yeah, well, even I want to say it was about 12 or 15 years ago, the BYD, even back then, said we one day want to dominate the world in EV production. Okay, so this has been a goal for a very long time, and they've built it out first in China. And yes, there's been a lot of government subsidies, direct government subsidies, indirect government subsidies, like, you know, city needs electric buses. And it's basically like, okay, BYD is going to supply them. So it's an open pipeline to do that. Obviously, a lot of technology transfer occurred. And they built their market out in China. They also are, are exporting cars now to Europe, and they have their eyes on Latin America. They want to build a factory in Mexico, and ultimately, as you know, the big prize is the United States, right? I mean, even though we're 5% of the world's population, we buy a lot of stuff, right? We buy about 20% of the world's stuff. And so, we sell 15 million cars here a year. So it's a very, very lucrative market, potentially. BYD sells no cars, no passenger cars here right now. And so, they have their eyes on this. And I think the concern is that, Flash, our makers here, particularly the Detroit makers, you know, GM, Ford, Stellantis, those brands are just now scaling up their EV production. We're just now putting the incentives in place, and we're just now building out a charging infrastructure. And so all of that is very capital intensive. It's expensive. You know, if you look at EV prices in the United States now, they're higher, right? You know, and it's just because, you know, we haven't reached that scale yet. Eventually we'll get there, and we'll be making electric vehicles that are a little more affordable. But you can't buy four wheels and a tiny little chassis for $14,000 in the United States, unless it's about 30 years old. So that is just, and it's not because they do it so much better. It's just because they've reached the scale and they've had the subsidies where they can sell them at that level. So that would totally wipe out, I think, our auto industry in the United States as it exists today. We've been raising the alarm bells about it. We did a report back in February that got a lot of attention. And now lawmakers are starting to weigh in and say, yeah, we also think this is a bad idea. And from an economic security, and then just also just the same argument as we're seeing on TikTok and some of this other stuff. Do we really want a Chinese company with access to all of our driving data as we're going around, and kind of the concerns that that might raise as well?
Well, you mentioned politicians getting involved in this, and I was reading earlier, apparently Senator Sherrod Brown from Ohio, he's very upset. He called Chinese-made electric vehicles an existential threat to the American auto industry. He wants Biden to ban their U.S. sales. Now, could that happen? Could Biden say, okay, no Chinese vehicles in the United States of America? Is that possible?
Yeah, there are ways to do that. I mean, I don't know that you can say that directly, but there are certainly ways that you can do that. One way is potentially happening right now. The Commerce Department is thinking about writing a rule that would exclude connected cars from the U.S. market. And let's face it, every new vehicle is connected now, right? Because you have the interface with all of that and the Wi-Fi and what have you. But it would exclude connected cars from the market that are owned by a company that is based in what is euphemistically called an entity of concern, which means China, basically, or Russia, North Korea, Iran. And so that's one way. Another way is to put, you know, we were just talking about tariffs on steel. The existing tariffs on autos coming from China are about 27.5%. Those could be raised quite a bit. That would basically exclude them. But then, Flash, the other thing, the tricky thing, is that we have to look at if BYD establishes a factory in, say, Mexico to make cars, and would bring them in under the auspices of the free trade agreement we have with Mexico. And so we do have to find a new mechanism to be able to account for that, because that also would not be a good development. But yes, so there are ways that we can do it. We're glad Senator Brown has recognized this and views it as a threat. And I think it's one thing you don't hear more about, in part because you just don't see them on our roads, right? You don't see Chinese. I mean, there's Polestars, which are kind of like a high-end EV, but they sell only in the thousands or the tens of thousands, I think. But that's really it right now. But they are just over the horizon, and I think that's the thing. I mean, we've seen, you know, what has happened when the Japanese makers first started to import, and then the Korean makers, and, you know, they've set up factories here, and hopefully the UAW will have the opportunity to organize them. It looks like they're making some progress with some of these foreign nameplates, but it's a different story when it comes to China, just because the way that the government intervenes so much. And so I think it represents a brand new, and really, as Senator Brown said, existential threat to auto communities in the United States. It would be very, very bad. It would make the Great Recession look like a warm up, basically.
Oh, yeah.
What we would see happen.
I'm sure he'll get a lot of support on that. And next time we have him on the show, we could delve into that a little bit deeper. All right, let's turn the page here. I know you and I talked about this several times on the show. It premiered in Cleveland, Ohio, about 2 months ago. This is a new documentary film, Relighting the Flame. And I understand it's on your website. And also, I guess you're doing a screening. What is it? Tomorrow in Indiana? Is that right?
Yeah, we're gonna be this film was made in Cleveland and made in Northwest Indiana at Cleveland Cliffs facilities, and also down at a research center down between Dayton and Cincinnati. And so we'll have the opportunity to screen it in Burns Harbor and to chat with some of the workers who were featured in the film. And you know, the steelworker president Dave McCall is going to be out there. We just got word that the Cleveland Cliffs CEO, Lorenzo Gonzalez, is going to be there as well. We'll have the filmmaker there, Carl Kress, who I know you had on the show. And those are my old stomping grounds in Northwest Indiana, so I'm looking forward to be out there as well. But we're, this film has picked up momentum. Carl's entering it in some film festivals, and then we'll be screening it in a couple of other locations around the country. But it really tells a new story about the opportunities that we're seeing in the steel industry today, and particularly the unionized steel industry, and what those jobs look like, why they're important, and how they just completely transform the lives of younger folks. By younger, I mean 20s and 30s, I guess. When they can get a job in the mill.
Never say never. I know they said many times that the steel industry, forget it, it's old, it's antiquated, it's not going to come back. But boy, did that change. Relighting the flame. Do check that out on the Alliance's website. And I understand about 70,000 people have seen it, which is pretty darn good. AmericanManufacturing.org. Hey, Scott, I know you got to go, but I want to call attention. Those of you listening right now, do check out that website. There's a great story. You know, I come from rock and roll radio where we used to play vinyl records. I'm showing my age here. But I need your help in getting Eric Astor on the show, who is the founder of Furnace Record Pressing. And I understand the company, it's based in Virginia, and they're manufacturing vinyl records. I love that. And apparently the company's owned by Metallica. Is that right?
Yeah. It's pretty awesome, I will say. And I had the opportunity to go out there and visit it a few years ago, and I was just blown away because I used to love vinyl. One of my sons is very into vinyl now. And they were running this as Furnace Records, and then they've done all of Metallica's catalog since 2013 on vinyl, which, as you can imagine, is massive and is huge for them. And Metallica decided to buy them. So Metallica owns it. They're still pressing records for other artists, and it really runs the gamut. They have, punk and jazz and the classics and new stuff as well. And Record Store Day gave all these places a boost, but they have way more business than they can handle, really, which is so awesome to see. And I just love it. It's such a great story. So yeah, we'll reach out. But Jeff Bonnier on our team wrote a great little piece about Furnace Records, and so it was and so we'd be happy to help spread the word about that, because it's such a great story.
I love it. Always good to leave on a good note here. Yeah, Eric Astor, founder of Furnace Record Pressing. AmericanManufacturing.org. Do check that out. Also, the Relighting the Flame video. You take care, my friend. Be safe. We'll talk to you in a month or two, okay?
I'll look forward to it, Flash. Thanks so much for having me on, as always.
All right, AmericanManufacturing.org. Quick break. Tom Buffenberger, our independent labor voice, coming up next.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
We're the nurses, firefighters, and claims representatives that help keep our government services running. We respond to natural disasters. We care for our nation's veterans. And we investigate discrimination in the workplace. We are federal and D.C. government workers. And we are proud to serve the American people. Working in more than 70 agencies across the government, we know we can fulfill our mission because our union has our back. Learn more at AFGE.org. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees, AFL-CIO. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Iron Workers. You can find more at ironworkers.org.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialists, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
This portion of the show brought to you by the International Union of Bricklayers and Allied Craftworkers. For more information, please visit bacweb.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And remember, you could check us out on Facebook or follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you by Blue Cross and Blue Shield's National Labor Office. Blue Cross and Blue Shield companies formed out of a need to provide affordable health care to teachers, loggers, and miners. And in 1965, the Blues developed the National Labor Office to strengthen its commitment to organized labor. Well, today, Blue Cross and Blue Shield's National Labor Office remains focused on America's workers, advocating for affordable and equitable health care, partnering with strategic alliances to provide industry-leading products and services, and proudly serving more than 18 million unionized workers, retirees, and their families, all working hard for America's working families, for the health of America. You can learn more by following them at Blue Labor on LinkedIn and X, formerly known as Twitter. All right, let's go to line number two. Welcome a dear friend, longtime supporter of America's workforce, Mr. Thomas Buffenbarger, former retired general president of the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers. And Tom, I know you've been following the Boeing debacle, because that's what it is. I mean, what's crazy about it, you got the CEO, and he's not alone. A lot of people in the management, seems like they were turning a blind eye to what was going on with the company. And last week, a whistleblower comes out and says the 787 Dreamliner could fall apart in midair unless safety issues were addressed. Tom, I'm going to let you pick it up from there. What the has happened to Boeing?
Flash, it's the never-ending story. You know, there's an axiom in the news industry. If you get a bad story and it lasts a day, you can make it through okay. If it lasts a couple days, well, you better be a little more serious how you address it. The Boeing story is a continuing story that's gone on months now. And it's been nothing but bad news. And the latest bad news certainly comes from the whistleblowers that came to Washington and testified before Congress. You know, these guys are engineers. They might know something about how a plane goes together and how that may affect safety. I find it fascinating that Congress now, or the Department of Justice, has opened a criminal investigation into a wide array of issues with Boeing. What happens, Flash, is the CEO, the top management team, they all head for the doors like rats on a sinking ship. And they're leaving with these unbelievable severance packages, you know, when the CEO can walk away with just under $40 million for doing a terrible job. I want to get fired like that, as I'm sure a lot of listeners do, where they give you millions to go away.
Yeah, really.
And it continues to the point now. What we're finding is, one, nobody was paying attention at the top of the management heap at Boeing, nor did they care. We find that the FAA, the federal agency that's charged with assuring the American public, all flying people that get on an airplane anywhere, that their job is to assure the highest quality safety standards and build standards are met. There's not enough of them because Congress won't fund it, so they bear some responsibility. And at the end of the day, what we've got is not enough people doing the proper job and too many people doing a bad job, and people die as a result of it. There's not enough inspectors, and the whistleblowers pointed out Boeing cut a deal with the government to let them inspect their own work. Well, that's opening the door very wide to shortcuts, cost cutting, and inattention to the detail. This is a big issue in the sense that this same type of management practice today, which goes back, and I've said it before, to General Electric and Jack Welch, it has permeated industry all over this country. And it's about short-term shareholder profits over safety, health, and quality. And this affects not only Boeing, but all its suppliers, all the suppliers to the suppliers. So America has a big reckoning coming. Are we going to go back to when we built products because we knew how to make them the best in the world? Or are we finally just going to close up shop on manufacturing, let China do it all, and we'll pay the consequences with lives? This story is never ending.
Yeah.
There was a great article that came out very recently, and I believe it may be from Vanity Fair. I can't remember right now, but it's Boeing and the Dark Age of American Manufacturing by an author named Jerry Usheim. And I would recommend it to anybody in any industry, whether you make steel, whether you make manufactured products, whether you transport it or whatever. He has nailed what the issues are in America. And the days of Jack Welch and the idea that shareholders have a right to a profit without consequences, those days are over.
Yeah.
So, Flash, I'm overwhelmed every day when I hear from my friends that are in the industry, many of them still working at Boeing, shaking their heads and worried about their future. On top of that, my union is sitting at the bargaining table right now with Boeing to cover all the major sites across this country. And, you know, what kind of negotiations are they going to have? How is Boeing going to respond? They're bleeding money now because they can't deliver the planes they need to deliver. And they're going to try and play poor mouth at the bargaining table. But they can pay the CEO millions to leave. Going to be an interesting time this summer.
Yeah, his compensation, we're talking about David Calhoun, $24.8 million in 2023. Their stock tumbled nearly 30%. Now you talked about the workers. Now, if the worker is not productive, you know, obviously workers are under fire no matter where you're working. And if you fail like that, you're out of a job. Why is it that people like David Calhoun get a bonus? I know he's leaving the company, but that just doesn't make sense now, does it, Tom?
Well, he's going to walk away with at least $33 million for doing a bad job. But then and again, Flash, let's talk about the three of the last four Boeing CEOs came from General Electric Aviation. And they left, they were all trained at the foot of Jack Welch. And they were trained how to arrange these kind of payments. We go back to Harry Stonecipher, who, when Boeing merged with McDonnell Douglas, Harry Stonecipher was then the CEO of McDonnell Douglas. He came to Boeing, became the president, not the CEO, but the president. In a short order, they had ousted the Boeing CEO, and Harry took over and brought all his folks from McDonnell Douglas, which was a failing company, brought them to Boeing, put them in charge over many critical departments, including engineering, and this is what we get. He was followed by Jim McNerney, another GE graduate from Jack Welch's School of Economics, came in. And we had all sorts of problems and a strike with him. Then we had now David Calhoun. Where does he come from? GE Aviation. And the pattern continually repeats itself. It's got to stop. Boeing needs to put Boeing people back in charge. They need to put engineers on the board of directors who just might know how to build an airplane. You know, Jim McNerney, when he was there, he put Nikki Haley on the board with a host of others who have zero clue about manufacturing and certainly about making airplanes.
Yep.
And we wonder why all of this has happened.
You want to know how accidents happen? You heard it from Tom's mouth. Tom Buffenbarger, former general president of the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers. That'll be it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow, the latest from the heat and frost insulators and how organizers and artists are working together. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.